We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, Her Hoop Stats fans. Welcome to another episode of Her Hoop Stats Unplugged. As always, you're here with Megan Gower and an update on the countdown to March. It starts tomorrow. The postseason is very, very close. And we're super excited about that. And to kind of get into that, we're talking a lot of bracketology this week. We've got obviously the rest of the regular season for a lot of conferences, conference tournaments to come, but the NCAA tournament is very close on the radar. So getting into a lot of detail there today. And I'm here today with Aaron Barzilai. Hey, Aaron, how's it going?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks so much for having me back on. It's been quite a while since I've joined you on the podcast.
It has been a while, but excited to have you back on. Leading up till March, when this comes out, it'll be one day until March. As crazy as that sounds. So
crazy. It is crazy. It's March, conference tournaments right around the corner. And as you said, right, there's a bracket reveal tomorrow from the committee. So excited to talk about that today.
Yeah, exactly. So we get our last preview of what Selection Sunday might look like tomorrow or today when this comes out, with the top 16 seed reveal, and then no more previews until the actual bracket comes out 2 weeks from today. So
no more official previews.
Yeah, official previews. Yeah, plenty of previews, just no official ones.
The benefits, right, of women's basketball, there's actually a ton of time to debate it. We should really be having more bracketology than in the men's game because the, you know, major conference tournaments are all done earlier.
That is true, other than the Big 12, which I think is going to have a very large impact on where things fall in that bracket. But
for sure, for sure. I was editing one of our stories that's coming out soon, and I was very clear. I'm like, hey, the regular season is not over as of, you know, essentially this moment, right? Sunday.
Right.
There's still a lot of important regular season games to go.
Exactly. And even postseason too, conference tournaments, I think, like, you're not going to know exactly where things are going to fall, even if you could predict it perfectly, until the very last second of that Big 12 tournament, I'm pretty sure. So,
oh yeah,
it's going to be an interesting one for sure.
Absolutely. So you're a resident bracketologist. Have you totally mapped it out?
I don't have it. Well, I have it mapped out to the best I could quickly after the final slate of games today. I've got it mostly mapped out with definitely some, like, I'm interested to see what's going to happen on the bottom. And then I've got a group of teams in the middle that I'm kind of like, this could go a few different ways.
I think it's a coin flip.
Yeah, it's really splitting hairs. And we'll get to UConn, but I think there's a lot of question marks about what the committee is going to do with UConn.
Yeah, so I'm excited to talk about that. We always debate them, you know, exactly what happened to them is the hypothetical case. I feel like we've been talking about, everybody talks about every year. So it's pretty interesting. But so do you think our listeners are going to be shocked at what you're going to say, or not really?
I don't think too much. I think the UConn question has gotten less crazy with the amount that other teams have lost since the last reveal. I think that's going to play a big piece into it.
cool. So, you know, we didn't talk about this before we started. Maybe we should have prepped even more, but do you want to go through it sort of starting with like the number one team by her hoop stats rating and work our way down? Normally people like to count down from, you know, 10 to 1 or whatever. But I actually think it's like pretty interesting at number four as well. The 4-5 decision is so important. So maybe we should start at the top.
Yeah, I think we should start at the top as well, especially because I think the one line is pretty set at this point. And honestly, I don't think it will change either. So, really? Yeah. Well, the order could change, but I think we know who the one seeds are at this point.
Really? So who possibly could be the top seed, Megan?
I mean, I think if I said anything other than South Carolina, people would be very confused, as would I. So, I mean, it's very obvious. I think it doesn't really matter what happens in the SEC tournament. South Carolina is the number one overall seed. I just don't see that changing.
Yeah, you could say Gamecocks, I guess, and that would still be true too. But
yes.
So I told you I was going to do the math on this. I went ahead and sort of did essentially a estimate of what our simulation is going to be for the chances that South Carolina can win the whole tournament, right? You know, so they're presumably playing a very weak team at home to open, and then you know, like maybe the 32nd roughly best team in the country, which I have as, you know, if you look at our herd stats rating, that's like Ole Miss. You know, then, you know, maybe the 16th best team in the country is something like on the order of Virginia Tech based on our Herhoop stats rating. And, you know, and of course we're going to use our Herhoop stats rating for this. You know, interestingly, BYU right now is currently 8th in our Herhoop stats rating, which like surprised me how high they were. But, you know, even if it's not BYU specifically, I think Iowa was 9th, and, you know, the odds would end up being about the same. So they play BYU, then they play like the 4th best team, presumably in the Final Four. And finally, the championship game, you'd expect them to play the number two team in the country, which is NC State. So when you put all that together and all our little win probabilities for each of those individual games, what's your guess as to the chances that South Carolina is going to win the whole thing based on that math?
Ooh, I'm going to guess somewhere in the order of like 30%-ish.
Wow, that's actually exactly right. You know, with our super high precision, right, it's 30.58%, so 30.6%, you know, which I think might surprise some people, you know, as dominant as they've been, that they still, you know, as we've estimated it, you know, as that little back of the envelope estimate is, you know, it's still only about a third of the time they'd win the tournament, you know, if they played it like 1,000 times or whatever. So, you know, I think it just speaks to, even as amazing as they've been all season, you know, how, you know, there's still no guarantees. It's like really easy to say that they're definitely the number one overall seed, and I wholeheartedly agree. But, you know, right, as Missouri showed, you know, in any one game, you can definitely go down.
Yeah, I will admit that I was looking at win probabilities between like the top five-ish teams the other day. So I had a little bit of a head start on trying to make that guess.
Yeah, I mean, on a neutral, we only give them like a 61% chance at this moment of beating NC State. You know, because NC State's quite talented too, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly they should be favored. I think we would, do I have that one up here? Give me a second. Let's see if I can stall or if I need you to stall. So, yeah, I mean, we think the score would be, you know, not unlike a lot of the late tournament games last year, right? Something maybe like 65-62. So, yeah, you just, you know, in these, as much as I would like to think they're perfect, you know, these predictions absolutely are not. And so, especially as you see, you know, something happens like, you know, Caitlin Clark's game today, when unbelievable. And, you know, suddenly, you know, the best team in the country is out. So it's going to be a fun tournament, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think when I'm looking at this tournament, like there's still a pretty small subset of teams that I think have what it takes to win it all. But I do think that we are going, or it's at least more likely that we could see some earlier upsets of teams that are considered part of that group.
Got it. I'm guessing you're not anticipating a early upset for South Carolina, though.
Probably not, but like you said, that Mizzou game like shows us that it could happen. So it's not off the table. I still don't think it will happen, but I think it's going to be anyone's game in a lot of these games. So it'll be an exciting tournament for sure.
Now, since they are the number one team, we should probably talk about them a hair more than the others.
Like, yes.
assuming they do, you know, walk to the championship and, you know, end up only with that one loss, right, all season. Mm-hmm. One, Missouri would be the only loss that they had. Like, I'll start with that, the more positive scenario. Like, you know, what do you think we'll have witnessed over the course of the tournament if that's how it plays out and they're hoisting the trophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts and finishes with Leah Boston, right? She's just been so great all season long. I know people want to debate the National Player of the Year, but I just don't think there is any debate at this point. I think it's Leah Boston's, and she's just on both ends of the floor, been fantastic for South Carolina. I forget how many straight double-doubles she's at this point. I know it's an SEC record. I mean, and for them to, outside of that one kind of fluke loss to Mizzou, run the table in the SEC is extremely impressive. I don't think the SEC is maybe as good at the top as it has been in the past few years, but still, I mean, LSU has been good, Tennessee has been good, Georgia has been good. For them to come out of that kind of unscathed outside of that one Mizzou loss is impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to count it up here as we talk. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think it's 21, because she got another one today, actually, against Ole Miss, 15 yes. points and 14 rebounds. So we've been talking a little bit on Slack, right? I 100% agree that she's got my vote for at the moment, at least, for National Player of the Year. What she does is so impressive. I wish, though, that people could also, or I hope that people can also recognize that just because people are pro Caitlin Clark means that they're not, does not mean that
they're
anti Boston. What Caitlin Clark is doing is amazing,
yes,
too, right? You heard it on ESPN today. The stat I know that we had dug up a little while ago, right, is that she's on track to be the first person ever to lead the country in both points and assists in the same season since the NCAA started tracking assists for women basketball in, I think it was 85-86 was the first season. So, I mean, it's remarkable.
Agreed.
But I agree, right? I mean, I think it starts with Leah Boston just kind of asserting kind of her will on the game.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, if you like look at these teams and who could get upset in the early rounds, I don't see it being South Carolina, just because I think the talent that Leah Boston has, and that compared to pretty much at every other center in the country, is going to allow her to, even if South Carolina gets themselves in a tight spot in an earlier round, I think having Leah Boston is going to be enough to get out of it.
Got it. Now, so what is the unfortunate but surprise scenario where they don't manage to win at all? What do you think that would end up looking like?
I think it's probably a loss somewhere in the Final Four area. I think South Carolina is very good, but I think Stanford has also gotten to a point where the gap between South Carolina and Stanford is not large, in my opinion. I think we've seen a Stanford team. I mean, it wasn't large right when they played back in December. South Carolina won by 4 points. That's a pretty small margin of error to begin with. But I think the Stanford team is better than they were back then. That game, if you remember, Stanford had a really, really solid first half, was able to score a ton of points, but then turned the ball over a ton in the second quarter or second half, something that's been a problem for Stanford this season. It's something that they have seemed to figure out a bit kind of down the stretch here in the conference play. They also have not lost since that South Carolina game. They've run the table in the Pac-12, which is impressive in and of itself. Maybe not as impressive as it has been in past years, but still impressive stretch to do that. And I think they've kind of figured out that point guard role a little bit more in the last month. Anna Wilson has been playing more in that role. She's been fantastic. I did the math on it last week, and this doesn't include like this week's games, but over the last month or so, going into this weekend, her assist to turnover ratio was over 6. That's insane.
That's very different than what we saw from Stanford at the beginning of the season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Her shot wasn't falling either, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. Which I don't think they necessarily need Anna Wilson to score. There's enough other people on that team that can score. If she can distribute the ball and continue to contribute what she does on the defensive end, I think they're in a really good spot with her on the floor.
I don't think that Stanford needs her to like be a ball dominant creator to beat South Carolina, but I think to beat a team like South Carolina, you do need her to score. You need everyone
probably
to score and, you know, play a little bit above average, right? And South Carolina, Carolina play a little bit below average. Yeah, so South Carolina beat them by 4 at home, right? On, I think it was December 21st. And typically, actually, you know, we find that going from home court to neutral, which is where they would play on, is worth about 4 points. So you might think that actually that we would call that game a toss-up, but that's kind of not what our model is showing at the moment. It still thinks that South Carolina would win that game 64-60. You know, one thing that's interesting too about Stanford, I think if I'm recalling this correctly, right, is that they're, you know, they don't play at a particularly high place as well. They're kind of comfortable playing a low scoring game too. So, you know, I don't think they mind South Carolina's approach to the game, maybe, right? Just the sort of general vibe of the game itself.
Yeah. And I think that slow pace can almost in a way favor Stanford just because they can hit the three, which can just allow them to create a little bit more separation there. South Carolina, if you're going to try to find one flaw with this, that South Carolina team, it's they're not great at the three ball. And I think that's an area that Stanford can kind of get the edge there.
Yeah, and get some variance on as well.
Yes.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Stanford, actually. They're technically third on our Hoop Stats rating. So NC State's second on our Hoop Stats rating. Who do you have as the second overall seed?
I still have Stanford there. I don't think that's changed since the last reveal. I mean, like I said, they've run the table in the Pac-12. I could see NC State maybe overtaking them as the second overall if they win the ACC tournament. But for right now, I still think Stanford has that second spot.
Do you think NC State could have the second spot if they both win their conference tournaments?
Yes. I think there is a chance for really, well, we're going to give away my four seed at Louisville too, that Louisville or NC State could take over that second spot with an ACC tournament win, depending kind of how the field falls. But they're going to have the opportunity, I think, to pick up a little bit more quality wins than Stanford is in their conference tournament.
Sure, sure. So, yeah. So what do you think about NC State? We talked about South Carolina and Stanford a bit already. What's your take on NC State? I know you've been paying attention to them in general.
Yeah, NC State, another team that can shoot the three ball really well. I think that's one of the things that stands out for them the most. I haven't looked at the stats in a few weeks, but at one point they had, I think, four players that were shooting over 40% from three. So just a team that can really get it done from downtown. I think we saw that especially in that game in the regular season with Louisville, where they were able to come back really big in the fourth quarter and get the win there with their, the three-point shooting. Maybe not as strong of a defensive team as Stanford and South Carolina are, but I think can make up for that on the offensive end. The one thing that's, I think, going to be interesting for them going into the tournament, especially if they have to play a team like South Carolina, is I don't think we've seen Eliza Kinane be necessarily as good of a player as we have seen in past seasons. Not a knock to her. I just like, she's not having that like All-American type season that we saw last year. And I think, you know, coming into a matchup with someone like Kalia Boston, that could be kind of a tough spot for NC State to be in.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, whether you, we didn't say that we were going to talk about this, but whether you think she'll end up, would end up on your first team All-America ballot or not.
Kinane, not for me. I don't think, I think there's too many other players that are in the front court that are having a better season than Kinane.
I love her game, but I think, and I love Reina Perez's game too, for the record, but yeah, I think that that's probably where I am as well.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know that she would even fall on a second team All-American. I think you just have too many players like Ilkley, Anissa Morrow, some players in the front court that are putting together some really, really, really strong seasons.
Anissa Morrow is awesome. I'm so excited. I mean, like, it's cool what she's doing. I'm hoping she's going to get a ton of attention next year. Maybe we'll get some attention to the tournament and then really kind of
see. Football makes the tournament. The Big East isn't doing itself a lot of favors right now.
Well, yeah, hard to go on a run, I guess, with UConn there, but you never know.
You never know. Great.
You never know. You never know. So, but in general, you said you're still pretty high on NC State. Do you really have them in that top tier teams?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like, I mean, South Carolina and Stanford, and then I think NC State is kind of the next team, and then Louisville after that. But I think they're in that top tier for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely rooting for them just because it's kind of great to see how the program's developed over the years, right? And I'd like to see them kind of carry on all the way through.
Yeah, I'd like to see them in the Final Four, but I also think that they are likely going to end up with being the team that deals with the situation of that you've got maybe a UConn team that might be a little underseeded in your region.
Got it. Got it. And so if NC State's next for you, who's your fourth number one?
Louisville. like I said, I think the order there can change depending who wins the ACC tournament. But I think there's a kind of a pretty steep cliff in resumes between the next kind of set of teams. So I do expect, barring maybe if like Louisville or NC State lost in like the first round of the ACC tournament or something, they might fall off. But I kind of think that the one line is pretty set at this point. The order could change, but I think the line is set.
So two ACC, one Pac-12, and one SEC.
Yep.
Got it. And so, yeah, right. I mean, I was sort of joking today after that first half, right? Louisville ruining college basketball.
Yeah.
I forgot the exact.
I think it was like 30 something to 4 or something. I don't know. I don't remember the exact
like
number either, but
it's all blurred out. But yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I think they, you know, ultimately, right, Notre Dame cut it to like 20 something, but still, it just kind of showed what Louisville can do.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think Louisville's a team that's found their groove a little bit more as of late. They've been a really, really solid defensive team all season long. I think it took them a while to find the offense. It took Ellie Van Leith a while to find her shot this season, but I think it's all coming together at the right time for them.
Yeah, right. I mean, Van Leith was struggling for a while. I mean, she's still, I mean, I guess she's up to like 37.5% from three. You know, still not shooting super well on two. So her field goal percentage is only 43%. But it seemed like on the, you know, sort of the middle of the year, I remember checking it out and like her percentages, I think, were much lower than that.
Yeah.
Correctly. But yet somehow she was still kind of coming up clutch every moment. And yeah, she's been in double figures the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, including today. You know, really kind of starting to maybe shoot the ball a little bit better. So, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there. You know, like there's definitely uncertainty, right? But I think that, yeah, I think that's good. You're right that there's a good case there for them to be that fourth number one seed.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it's a pretty strong case. I think there's just, yeah, a little bit too much of a drop off between that and the next level to argue that anyone else is going to make their way in there unless something really crazy happens in the kind of opening round of the ACC tournament.
Gotcha. So then who is in that next group?
So I have Iowa State and then Baylor right after them. So we're getting into the craziness of the Big 12 right after we move into that second line. Iowa State was on the two line in the last reveal, picked up a loss over Texas since then, but also beat Oklahoma and Kansas and then TCU and Texas Tech in that span as well. So I still think given the way other teams that were kind of on that two line in the last reveal have lost, Iowa State moves up and is the best two at this point.
You've got Iowa State as the number one, two?
Yep.
Gotcha. And no, our model has them ahead as well of Baylor. If they were to face off, like, I guess, you know, they probably will, we think, face off right in the tournament. And so on a neutral site, we give Iowa State a 57% chance to win, but only like, you know, 73-70. So definitely could go either way. Pretty close to a coin flip.
Agreed. Yeah. I think it's a close flip in that I think order could definitely flip depending how things go. And the rest of the Big 12 regular season first and then the Big 12 tournament.
I know they're playing tomorrow night, right? This is going to go out during the day. So
yeah.
Shortly after people are listening to this big game, I think 7 o'clock tomorrow, 7 o'clock Monday on ESPN2.
I'm guessing that the halftime show of that is when we're getting our bracket reveals.
I think so. So I'll be it'll be amusing to hear if they say anything about what they say about two of those.
So the fun part will be that reveal will be irrelevant 20 minutes after it comes out.
So one of those teams obviously is going to lose. Like,
yeah.
So you said you basically have Iowa State and Baylor 5 and 6 in your
astrology.
So when one of them loses, are you of the opinion that shouldn't really change and they'd still be 5 and 6? Or if we were talking on Tuesday, would you then?
I think it's going to depend how they lose. Mm-hmm. If it's a close game, I could say it's kind of staying table stakes. I think they're both kind of still have pretty solid convincing cases to be kind of at the top of the two line. So maybe they flip positions if, you know, Baylor wins or whatever. But I think kind of depending how they lose, if they get blown out, I think it's gonna be a different story.
Right. Absolutely. No, I'm a firm believer in that, right? It's like if they were to play instead of, you know, each other, if like Baylor was to play South Carolina and lose to them, like, I don't think you should really penalize right. them. If we think South Carolina is a better team and they sort of play to expectations. But yeah, if it turns into a big blowout like that Michigan-Iowa game today, maybe then it's a little different. And even then, right, I'm a pretty firm believer. It's only one data point.
Yes, exactly.
You really got to look at the whole totality of the season, right? Baylor's, let's see who I got here now. Oh, sorry. So yeah, I mean, Iowa State's like 16th basically in margin of victory. You know, Baylor is, 13th, essentially, right? So they're quite similar. They've got some losses. Well, I guess Iowa State's already lost to Baylor once. That was at Baylor, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty handily, 87-61. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a sweep or, you know, what happens there.
Yeah, exactly. The Big 12 has been nothing but chaos, so I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah. So interesting, but you have Iowa State over Baylor because, looking at their kind of our pair mm-hmm. resumes page for these two teams, right? And, you know, it's not like Iowa State has a lot of big wins.
Yeah, I think it's just the number of quality wins in the Big 12. And then just also looking at where the committee had them last time compared to where they had Baylor. I don't know that Baylor's picked up enough, like, more quality wins in the last, couple of weeks to leapfrog them at this point.
Yeah, I guess Baylor has the worst losses, right?
Yeah, they have not as good losses. So
although, you know, I don't know, and this can sort of lead into the UConn discussion, which I'm guessing is probably coming up. on your list. Are they seven on your list?
So I have a group of four teams that I am debating where they go still. It's okay. LSU, UConn, Michigan, and Texas. It's kind of this next group that I think you can argue yourself into a lot of different orders for.
Yeah,
I think the first six to me is pretty clear cut, but after that it gets dicey.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, right, is so against our Her Hoop Stats top, I guess, 25, like Iowa State is only 2-4, right? So they've beaten they've beaten South Dakota State and Iowa, but they've lost to Baylor. They lost to Texas twice, who Baylor beat twice. And they lost to LSU. Did I say that already? And they beat South Dakota State very early on. I think that's, So I really do value at the top, like how these teams are playing against the very best teams, right? Occasionally there can be a little bit of a slip up. Baylor, you know, actually got swept by Oklahoma and lost to Kansas State, which are, you know, okay, sort of okay, but at the real top, they beat Texas twice and they have that Iowa State win. They've got losses to Maryland and Michigan. So, I mean, I guess that's why you got them 5-6 because they're that close together.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I mean, how much the committee is taking this into account, but that Maryland loss, I think, looks better on paper than it is because that was a very injured Maryland team that they lost to.
Yeah, that was that in the tournament in the Bahamas or whatever?
It was right before that. But yeah, okay. That same kind of version of the Maryland team that was not what Maryland is, right? So
it seemed like every day there was bad news. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm sorry. So UConn's in your next group, you said, right?
Yeah. I think they're hovering that line between the 2 and the 3. I could see them coming in on the 2 line or on the 3 line. I'm not entirely sure. I think it's a hard question to answer because so much of it comes down to how much the committee is going to adjust for who they've had available versus who they have available now.
Well, what does our committee of two think? What do you, we've talked about this before. What's your opinion on this exact case where there's like the body of work, but, and now granted, right. Becker's
is back.
She's back. It's not like she's back and she scored 30 in game one or whatever.
Right. So
we can't just sort of assume she'll be at full health. I think that we'd like to assume that, but in general, in that kind of a concept, which is we're pretty close on, you know, the idea that, you know, or Maryland, as you said, losing those games early on when they were injured, you know, like, how do you think about how the committee ought to be both selecting teams and seeding teams when a team wasn't at full strength for a while, essentially, but is at full strength now at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think especially when it comes to seeding at the top here, and I think it's especially important at the top because right? Like that's going to be have the biggest impact on like who's going to the Final Four. It's important to seed. I mean, it matters the bottom two really throughout, but it is important to seed based on, I think, where those teams are at now. Like to me, to seed UConn, and people will probably disagree with this, but to seed them as like a low three because you think their resume is worse, even though like they didn't have that talent available, is probably doing a disservice to who they're going to have to play against at the top there, where they don't have the strongest resume, but that's
the same argument also right applies to a team from a weaker conference that maybe doesn't have the body of work because they haven't as many opportunities.
Exactly.
I think it's really high. And then if they're stuck playing a much harder game than a team at their true level, if we had perfect information, would if it came from more of a one of the six major conferences, then you're also hurting the opponent as well, right?
Exactly.
So it sounds like you're arguing for something that I think I've always been in favor of, which is more of kind of essentially seeding based on really a predictive kind of approach, right? Mm-hmm. Here's where they are today, here's what we think how it would play out at this moment, right? And so you're using the information from the past to make that assessment, right? And while we've got our model, right, ultimately we know our model is not perfect, and we wouldn't necessarily say this is exactly how you need to see them, but you're kind of using other information or weighting it differently than the information that we're using in the model, as opposed to something that's a little bit more like a more traditional professional league when it really is just record, right? Like it doesn't you don't get credit for wins and losses in the WNBA. You don't get adjusted in your playoff seeding because of injuries.
Which I think, I mean, this is like a NCAA tournament problem because it's not seeded at all by record, really. So it is what it is. Yeah. But yeah, I think you've got to consider that. I think to me, the thing with UConn is, assuming they run the table in the Big East tournament, I don't know that they're going to be on the two line when they release it today, I guess, when this comes out tomorrow. But I think we will see them there come selection Sunday, assuming like Paige Beckers is playing more minutes come the Big East tournament. I could see the argument that you still don't really know what level Paige is back at. She's only played, 10-ish minutes, 13 minutes a game so far in these two games. But if she's back in the Big East tournament playing, 25, 30 minutes a game, I think you have to put them on the two line. Go ahead.
How good did you think they were, like, basically before she got hurt?
I think things were coming together. This team is, I think, just in general, very hard to see, to kind of judge, because before Beckers came back, they were still missing so many key pieces in basically every game. Like they've had three games this season, I think, even in the last, since Beckers went down, where they've had everyone but Beckers. So it's very, very difficult, I think, to kind of figure out where they're at. Said
Fudd play with Beckers at the beginning? It was like
a little bit, but so Fudd was played a little bit with Beckers at the beginning, but AC Fudd was injured during that time and then was out before Beckers was out. Obviously, we've seen at this point that AC Fudd, the player that's been playing the last month or so, is very different than the injured AC Fudd that we were seeing at the beginning of the season. And then you've got things like, when Beckers went down, they also lost Nika Mule for a while. Right before that Oregon loss, they lost Kristen Williams to COVID protocol. Right before they lost to Villanova, Olivia Nelson-Dodo was out. They lost Dorker Juhas for a few games. They've lost Caroline Dutime for a couple games. So it's very difficult to kind of judge where this team is at, because you really haven't seen much of a body of work from them where they've actually had everyone that they're going to have going into the tournament, knock on wood, I guess. But we haven't really seen it all together.
Yeah. Feels like a lot of potential or something. I guess I sort of thought they were like a top 10-ish team.
Yeah. I think even like just strictly based on their resume right now, I think they're still a top 10 team, right? Like even without adjusting for that, I think a lot of teams have lost a lot of games, so that puts them in a better situation. So I don't think
Her stats rating still has them fourth, which seems a little high to me, right? That's not my eye test assessment. They're still having a good season. What's interesting, right, is they're kind of benefiting, and it's one of our issues, right, is they're like fourth in the country of margin of victory unadjusted, right? And part of that's the schedule, and we probably need to control for that a little bit better analytically in our model. But then you look at it more on a team by team basis, like on our compare teams page. Oh, where did that go? You know, like UConn versus Michigan, right? You said is also in your group there.
Yep.
Right. And like, I mean, the problem is that who's UConn's best win? And I don't think it's going to happen in the Big East tournament, right?
Right. It's Tennessee or Notre Dame. I think it's kind of.
Yeah, Tennessee, too. Notre Dame. And we got Arkansas actually at that same level.
Yeah.
So those are like three wins of teams that are, you know, what would you say, like roughly 25th-ish, 20th to 25th? Mm-hmm. I don't know where you have Tennessee right now.
Yeah, Tennessee is probably in the 20s. Notre Dame, I mean, they had that bad loss today, but I think they're still probably hovering around, like could still be in that top 16 group, hovering around the bottom of the four line. So,
right. But they probably, I mean, the point is, right, like you, there's a really good chance, regardless of what UConn's seeding is in this reveal, that they'll have no wins against any teams right. in the top 16.
Yeah, agreed.
Right. Whereas, you know, like a Michigan mm-hmm. beat Maryland twice. I'm not sure what the health situation was there. They split with Iowa. They beat Baylor. Not sure whether Indiana is going to be in your top 16 group or not, but
barely, but yeah,
you know, they're kind of in a little bit in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, we look at it that way. It's kind of hard from my, and maybe this is getting back to where you are. Like it's kind of hard to put Michigan behind UConn, I think.
Yeah, this is where I'm struggling with kind of this whole middle group of LSU, Michigan, Texas, and UConn, because I think the other teams definitely have more quality wins, but I think we've already seen when the committee reveals to fly that there's been some adjustment for the fact that UConn hasn't had certain players available. I expect to see more adjustment knowing that Paige Beckers is back. Yeah, I don't think you could have made that adjustment not like knowing until she knows you've seen her on the court. So
got it. And one more time. So your group is Michigan, LSU,
UConn and Texas.
UConn and Texas. So what's the case for LSU? We actually have them only 23rd in the Her Hoop Stats ratings. So that would be like outside the top 16 mm-hmm. even, right? They're 25-4. What is it, you know, that you think that, you know, could propel them into that, puts them in this tier?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the quality of wins. They have a lot of quality SEC wins. They've got a win over Iowa State from non-conference play. And outside of like their worst losses to Florida, but outside of that, I mean, they've got a loss to Arkansas, a Florida Gulf Coast loss that the committee might not love, but is not a bad loss in my opinion, like as a good Florida Gulf Coast team. And then
we have them 21st in our stats rating.
Yeah, exactly. So not a bad loss by any stretch of the means. They're the second number two team in regular season SEC standings. I think that's probably enough to kind of get them within that group.
Yeah, gotcha. But again, Iowa State's probably a good shot of being their only top 16 win.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that makes me pro Michigan, I think. Man, as they say, right? Bo Schembechler.
Yeah. Where I'm struggling with a lot of this like group too is like when you look at the two seeds from the last reveal, I mean, Michigan, Arizona, Indiana were all part of that group. All of those teams have lost at least three games since the 10th. That's a lot of losses quickly.
That is a lot of losses. Yeah, so Texas, right, has that really nice early season win against Stanford. How do you think about a win like that, you know, when so much has happened since then?
Yeah, I feel like that Stanford win is obviously something that's going to be a statement on Texas's resume. How much I like take away from the fact that they beat Stanford back in November, not that much. I think obviously we talked about in the beginning how kind of Stanford has struggled with that point guard position. That was Stanford's first game, second game in the season, right? They were definitely figuring things out. I don't think I take a whole lot away from that Texas result. They're a strong defensive team. It was a tough matchup and they got the win. So it's something that's obviously a big item on Texas's resume. I don't know that it actually says that much about Texas at this point. But Texas does still have since conference play, two wins over Iowa State. They did drop both games to Baylor, but they've got, you know, they split the pair with Oklahoma, two wins over Kansas State. So they've definitely amassed a pretty good quality set of wins in Big 12 play as well. I believe they were on the three line on last reveal.
I'll defer to you on that one.
Yeah, three line. They were the 12th overall on the last reveal. Oh, no, sorry, that's Tennessee. I'm looking at the wrong thing. They were on the four line, 15th overall. So a pretty big move up. But since then, they've added a win over Oklahoma, added a win over Iowa State, West Virginia, Kansas State, and TCU. So they haven't lost. They've picked up a couple of good wins. I think given the amount of losses other teams have seen that were kind of above them, I don't think it's crazy for them to make a pretty big jump up.
Got it. Got it. Well, I don't know. When I look at this, you know, I think my advice to the committee is to have maybe Michigan number 7. Does that seem crazy if you're toying with that?
I struggle with the fact that they've lost 3 games since last reveal and they were 5 there. I think they could go 7. I still feel like I like their resume the best. So I probably put them at 7. It's hard to tell.
Yeah,
I think Texas is probably the bottom of that group, and it's some kind of mix between Michigan, UConn, and LSU in 7, 8, 9, but we'll see for sure tomorrow.
Yeah, and I guess philosophically, that probably really boils. I think it's probably Michigan, and either you are willing to give UConn the benefit of the doubt or you're not.
Right, and I think that's going to be it telling tomorrow. I think that's one of the hardest things to predict because it's just such a, not like a situation that it's easy to point to like a historical example of how they would handle this.
Yeah, so. And it's always an interesting question, but I guess today you're trying to sort of predict what the committee's going to do as opposed to
who I actually think are the
what would your vote be if you were on the committee for the last two seeds?
I think I would go Michigan, UConn. I think dropping UConn to that third line, I have a hard time getting behind it, knowing the level of talent that they're going to have available. And I think also in terms of like when you start looking at the Big 12 team, what that means in terms of their region, I think you're probably screwing over one of your top 2 seeds by doing that as well. So I think I would like to see them on that 2 line.
Screwing, you're hurting one of your 2 seeds by if you.
One of your like top, your number 1 overall, like your South Carolina or your Stanford, I think, because of the way the Big 12 teams are going to fall right now.
Oh, I see.
I think the way that they're going to get pushed into a different region. Right now, I think if you look at like ESPN's bracketology, UConn is in the 3 in South Carolina's region, and I think that would be a poor way to treat your number 1 overall seed.
That would be a pretty amazing, I guess, Elite 8 game.
Right? Yeah, I really don't think that's going to happen. I don't think anyone wants that to happen. I in general, think that would be a poor way to treat South Carolina that they're not number 1 overall.
Maybe. Plus, you think there's a conspiracy theory there for ratings?
Well, yeah. I don't think it's great for ratings to put UConn and South Carolina in the same bracket.
Yeah, right.
Supposed to be a consideration, but I think at some point it will become a consideration.
Yeah. Well, yep. Indeed. And so if it was up to you, would you put Texas ahead of LSU? I think that's kind of what I'm looking at from looking at their resumes, but
yeah, I think there's an argument for that. I want to give LSU more credit for like winning, but yeah, I think Texas does have more quality wins, so it's hard.
Yeah, they've got the Stanford, they've got 2 Iowa State wins. Mm-hmm. LSU has an Iowa State win. You know, Texas did lose to Baylor twice, but you know, I don't think, you know, on our compare resume sheet, you know, they didn't play anyone comparably. LSU didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we give actually Princeton a lot of credit. So that shows up pretty nicely here as a win. You know, LSU has the FGC loss, as you mentioned. Texas has a Tennessee loss. And then there's like a whole bunch of games that LSU has won, which are kind of impressive in that kind of 20-40 range for teams.
Yeah.
And then you get a whole, you know, then you start to get into a world where Texas has a couple not good losses, or at least one particularly not good loss in Texas Tech.
Yep.
At home, no less.
So. Yeah. Texas Tech has, I think, won like a grand total of 3 Big 12 games, but they've upset, I think, Texas, Baylor, and someone else that's been ranked. So,
look here. Yeah, they beat Oklahoma and Kansas State.
Okay.
I don't think they've beaten anyone early. Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
But still, right? That's a little rough.
Yep.
So cool. Okay, so that batch again: Texas, UConn, LSU, Michigan. It's so hard to keep track of this, right? It gives you for what the committee does. And I will say, to your point, when I went to a committee it was like a mock selection thing they did for the media and for coaches to kind of show what the process was. They did talk about seeding based on, you know, there's the considerations for all the rules around conferences and stuff, which is sort of alluded to, although I'm not quite sure I'm fully tracking how it applies as far as breaking up the big, you know, since the Big 12.
Yeah, it applies more when you start getting into bracketing and putting teams into regions.
Exactly, exactly. But they did sort of talk about selection based on body of work, but then seeding based on prediction.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think
is what
we've been seeing a lot in terms of like the way UConn has been seeded so far and the way I expect them to be seeded tomorrow.
Okay, so getting back, now looking at it again from our Her Hoop Stats rating perspective. So we've talked about South Carolina, NC State, Stanford, UConn. We have not talked about Maryland. We've got BYU pretty high. We've got Iowa pretty high.
We've got
Princeton and Gonzaga probably higher than you do. So who's like in your next group? Is Maryland and or Iowa in there?
So I have Iowa and Maryland both in the four line, but maybe just quickly to wrap up the three line, I've got Arizona sitting there. I don't think there's a whole lot of surprise there.
Arizona and who?
Oklahoma. So teams that have been in the reveal so far had some losses, but so dropped down some, but still sitting in that three range. But yeah, the top of my four line right now is Iowa and Maryland. I think Iowa did themselves a lot of favors over the last week, especially today, that big win over Michigan. I think definitely gets them in there. I don't know how I'm sold on them being the top four, but I think we see them on the four line tomorrow. And Maryland as well, I think, has picked up some good wins over the last 2 weeks. Obviously some consideration to the talent that was available and some of those losses, I think they're probably on the four line as well at this point. I think both of those Big Ten teams get in, and then another Big Ten team too, Indiana, sitting in the four line as well. So a lot of Big Ten going on there.
Got it. So one more time then, your last two threes are who again? They're Arizona and Oklahoma, because we've got Oklahoma 40th in the Her Hoop Stats rating.
Oklahoma is a team that I think they're not that high in the net either, and they weren't high in the net when they were in the reveal this past one. So they were the 9th overall seed in the last reveal. I think they were in the 20s or 30s in net at that point too. They're 32nd in net right now, but they're just the number of wins they have in the Big 12 that are quality wins, I think it's kind of just put them up there. The Big 12 in the way that...
Who are you giving them credit for? They lost to Iowa State twice. They beat Baylor twice, which is like...
Yeah.
Although maybe a little less so if Baylor loses again tomorrow. They split with Texas.
Yeah. So the two wins over Baylor, I think they have two wins over Kansas State. Is that correct? And then...
They split with Kansas State.
The win over Texas,
yes.
Yeah.
They split with Texas.
Yeah, I think they still just have more quality wins. And I think as we start getting further down this list, the number of quality wins declines very quickly.
Yeah, it really is pretty amazing. So they do have the worst loss of the two teams again with that. They have lost to Texas Tech, right? As we said. So Maryland's got three kind of tough early losses to South Carolina, NC State, and Stanford, right? But of course, Oklahoma would do that. As well. I mean, I guess it hurts Maryland that they lost Michigan twice. That's a close one, I guess.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma benefits from the fact that those other three top Big 12 teams are ahead of them. So some of those losses don't look as bad as maybe some of the other ones.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, one reason our system doesn't, the Her Hoop Stats ratings don't like Oklahoma as much is that their margin of victory is not super high. They're only, they're winning only by 8.5 points per game, which is 58th in the country versus Maryland's at 11.9. Mm-hmm. And even when you control for pace, Maryland ranks 36th and Oklahoma ranks 79th. So, you really have to believe that that schedule is much tougher.
Yeah. Well, I think we see that in their net ranking too, but I think what we've seen is that the committee clearly didn't care about that in the last year. So I think that I'm largely using that as the measurement that, the committee knows their net is low, still put them at 9th overall in the last reveal. So it was really, I think we've seen this over the last two reveals. There's a lot of focus on quality wins.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to Baylor twice versus Iowa and Baylor. And do you consider BYU a quality win?
Yes, I do. They're a team I don't have in, but I hope that we'll see them in. The committee doesn't tend to, I think, favor on the top line the mid majors. Still think they're a team that might get in there with if other teams lose in their conference tournaments. But a team I'll be happy if we see them on the top 16 line tomorrow, but I don't know that we will.
Do you think that Oklahoma's win over BYU is better than Maryland's over Indiana and Nebraska?
I don't know about over Indiana. Definitely over Nebraska, in my opinion. I think it's a better one. I think BYU is a really good win, but I don't know that the committee necessarily will look at it as better than Nebraska. I think that's fair.
How about Ohio State? We should, they're probably not on your list, but we should give them some love, right?
Who?
Ohio State, sorry.
Ohio State, yeah. Ohio State, I was struggling with this too because I'm like, all right, so Iowa and Ohio State split the Big Ten regular season title, but yeah. I don't think Ohio State has enough quality wins to quite get in there.
Got it. Okay, so coming back to it then, do you have a quote-unquote Final Four for the four seeds, or how far does your group spill there?
Yeah, so I said Iowa and Maryland and Indiana already, I think. So those are three of your fours. And then I think Notre Dame probably still sneaks in at number 16, even with that rough loss today. But I think BYU and UNC are hanging out right around there too.
Got it. So Notre Dame, so you have Notre Dame ahead of UNC.
Yeah, I do for now at least.
And what, I'm pulling up their resumes here. What kind of tips that balance for you?
Let me pull it up too. I'm trying to remember.
Notre Dame does have that NC State.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. They have that win over NC State. That is a really quality win. And NC State blew out North Carolina on the flip side there. But
yeah, and then Notre Dame did beat Carolina in January, 70-65. Mm-hmm. I think everyone was healthy. I forget.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's splitting hairs, I think.
Yes, I would.
They're very close. I think Notre Dame just has a little bit more of couple better wins than North Carolina does. But I mean, like I said, it's splitting hairs.
Yeah, I think they probably have the worst losses, right?
Because they've
Duke and Florida State. So it'll be interesting to see how the committee cares about that. Because the worst team that North Carolina has lost to is either one. I mean, Notre Dame or Georgia Tech, I probably, depending on how you rank them. Maybe
Virginia Tech, yeah. It's funny how you want to say it. But yeah, I agree. I think it's hard to tell. Notre Dame won the head-to-head. Not that that's a huge point, but I think it gives a little bit of an edge as well. So
yeah, I'm curious here. I didn't look this one up ahead of time. If they were to play on a neutral, hypothetically, right? Like, I don't know.
I guess our neutral gives what's new. Oh, we're very high on UNC though, so I think also great assault on that. But I guess North Carolina, the 62% chance of winning on the floor.
It's higher when you say a 62% chance of winning instead of a 4-point win, though, right? It's
funny. Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be a close game. And I do think we're a little too high on UNC in our model, to be fair. So,
23-5, though. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Pretty good. So, I'm sorry, right? So it was North Carolina, Notre Dame, and so then if you were to have those two, who's the last one out? Because you got us to 17, right?
I think that would be UNC would be the last one out. That would be 17, and I think BYU is right there too. Like I said, I'd like to see them, and right. I don't know that the committee will put them in.
So if you were on the committee, you would have what, BYU 16? Is that what you're
saying? I think I would have BYU in if I was on the committee, but I don't necessarily expect to see that tomorrow. I do think there's a much more likely chance that we see it in the actual bracket, though, because the mm-hmm. chance that, well, because all these teams are in the same conference, someone has to lose. So
yes, there'll be some losses. BYU could win a conference tournament.
So if BYU wins out, I think they more likely than not could end up in the top 16.
So then I guess, we've actually been going for a while here, so we should probably think about wrapping it up. But I mean, the natural question is, like, who do you think could surprise us? Or, who, alternatively, another way to think about it might be, like, whose fans are we going to hear complaining to us that we didn't mention them yet?
Probably Tennessee. The thing for Tennessee with me is not so much, I mean, their resume has taken, like, a nosedive in the last few weeks, but the loss of Jordan Hairston and not knowing what her status is for the tournament at the moment, you can't put them in there. I don't think, not knowing that at this point, that's a huge loss for them. So, I mean, they kept it really close with LSU today, but if they had pulled off that win, I think we'd be talking about this differently, but they didn't pull it off. So I think they're got to be out at this point. Yeah, Oregon has fallen out.
Six, I think, right?
They've taken.
I mean, sorry, 4 and 6 in their last 10 is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And then what about, we haven't mentioned Virginia Tech really.
They're hanging around, I feel like, with that Notre Dame UNC group as well. I think they haven't quite amassed the number of, you know, the bigger wins, but a team I think that if they make some noise in the ACC tournament could sneak in for sure to the top 16. Oregon as well.
About them. Oregon too. Yeah, I was going to ask about them next.
Yeah, I think, again, a team that if they make some noise in the Pac-12 tournament, I think they're a team that we even saw that, like, you know, at the last reveal, they were still in after a couple losses. They've lost 3 games since then. I mean, the one to Stanford, that doesn't really matter to me. I think you expect them to lose that, but the Oregon State and the Colorado losses, I think, bumped them out. But they come and pick up some big wins in the Pac-12 tournament, given we clearly see that their injuries have been adjusted for in the first 2 reveals. They could sneak back in.
Yeah, they're only, I guess, 5-5 in their last 10 themselves. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's
to 8-5. What 8-5? Then you'd be sounding a little bit better. And, you know,
I kind of feel like they're in a position where unless they upset Stanford in the Pac-12 tournament, they're probably not in. I just don't think there's enough opportunities to pick up really high quality wins in the Pac-12 right now.
Got it. And how do you think about them from a health perspective, sort of like the UConn discussion?
Yeah, I think that's another like really good example of ways we can point to like kind of the committee is definitely adjusting when teams get healthy back. Cause like we saw in the first reveal they were in and they were still in the last reveal. So it kind of feels like some of those early losses have been not totally ignored, but somewhat ignored in the kind of where they're being seated. Which I think is again appropriate, right? Like if they're truly a 4 or 5 seed, like in talent right now, that's where we should seed them.
And are you willing to go the other way on that? And if someone gets hurt or someone,
yes,
I don't know, comes down with COVID, you know, drop them.
Yeah. Down. Well, I think COVID, not so much because like it's theoretically shouldn't really impact like outside of like the next like 7 days or whatever. But
Right. I mean, they have COVID and, you know, they're going to, I mean, that could hurt them through the Elite Eight almost, right?
Girl,
like 14 days, right?
Yeah, I feel like we're not going to know that someone has COVID enough to like address for it. So I don't think that's necessarily going to fit. But yeah, I mean, like I said with Tennessee, like the Jordan Hairston injury, if she's not going to be available, I think you have to adjust for that. And I think we've seen that in the past, right? Like a lot of time coaches are very close-lipped about players that have minor things going on because they want the committee to assume that they're going to be good to go.
run them out there when they're a little bit injured if you're not just make sure the committee doesn't penalize you and then like, oh, we got to rest here the first weekend or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I think you should do it both ways. I think you should be trying to see it as close to what our teams are at currently.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So are you, what's your overall take on the whole bracketology seed reveal really process? Are you a fan of them doing it during the season like this? Or, you know, in the middle of a game that could potentially change things, is it kind of like, why in the world are we worrying about this until the actual tournament happens?
I like it because I think it's nice to get a snapshot of like where the committee actually is throughout the season, especially in seasons like this with the COVID impacts and everything else. That like, I think there's a lot more variables that are going into this than if it's just, you know, your standard normal season and stuff, because you have to consider all these, like, you know, Iowa State lost a game without both the Jones sisters. How do you consider that? All that kind of stuff. So I really like getting the snapshot. And yes, it's irrelevant 5 minutes later, you know, when someone loses, but you still can kind of adjust from that. I think it makes it, you know, like, okay, this is what it is right now. And it's a lot easier to adjust up and down from that, try to figure out where things are going to go than like starting from a blank slate. So I think I like it from that perspective. I think especially, you know, this one that's 2 weeks out, we'll be able to play with things from where, you know, what happens in the conference tournaments and have a decent at least picture of what some of those top lines are going to look like. The one thing I think that gets frustrating about it is that, especially with the regions, I think fans tend to have large reactions to it, where I like to see where 1 through 16 is. I could care less what region they say people are in right now, because it's like one game changes that, right? So it's just it's not like worth I think UConn fan in particular right now have been, you know, very much focused on that, and like, are they not going to be in Bridgeport? But I think that part is so irrelevant until you get the final bracket, because like I said, one game.
The four regions again are Bridgeport, Connecticut, Greensboro, yes. North Carolina, and I am blanking on the other two.
Spokane, Washington, and Wichita, Kansas.
Great job saying Spokane. As an East Coaster, I'm impressed. So and Wichita, right?
Yeah.
So that would mean, what would be your guess then as to how the one seeds would shake
South out? Carolina and Greensboro, Stanford and Spokane, NC State and Bridgeport, and Louisville and Wichita.
So yeah, NC State and Bridgeport would be sort of the interesting one, I guess.
They're most likely to get stuck with UConn. But I mean, something could change where UConn's not in Bridgeport. It's still very possible, but I think if UConn's on the two line, I have a hard time seeing them not being in Bridgeport.
Yeah. And what if they're on the three line? They probably would still have a decent.
They'd still be in Bridgeport if they can. The Big 12 might make it difficult. So the rule is that the top four seeds from one conference, if they are on the top four seed lines, cannot be put into the same bracket. And you've got Iowa State, Baylor, Texas, and Oklahoma. And that kind of, granted, someone could fall, you know, with conference tournaments and still regular season games to be played, but they're all.
Although right then in that case, it's actually probably good for UConn for all four of those teams to get in, because then they all have to be there. And so you can have UConn and a Big 12 team by definition in one of
the right. It's just a matter of what line they're on. So if you've got, you know, a bunch of them on the three line and stuff, that can make things difficult. It's not so much them all being in that top four group. It's just like, if they're all concentrated on that three line, with UConn, it can make it harder.
Yeah, we've got a lot of exciting plans for things that not only we're going to try and pull off in the next couple weeks leading up to the tournament, but also for next year. One of my dreams, which I haven't thought exactly about how well we could do it, is like really actually simulate the bracket and all those complicated rules.
Yes, there's so much subjectivity to it that it's, I think, pretty difficult to do.
Yeah, exactly. But it would be fun. And, you know, one thing I'm going to be interested to see is, I feel like we talked about bracketology for maybe 10 minutes, maybe a little longer last time. And I'm hoping that this, because this is only this, is this the second seed reveal? Am I, or is it the third?
Third. It'll be the third.
Sorry, I forgot the third. So I'm hoping that we can actually have some like discussion about it this time, because like there aren't that really many games that are super exciting going on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I feel like it left the conversation pretty quickly. I don't know if that was your impression after the first and second one.
I think it does. And I think part of that is the fact that like when they have these reveals and all these top teams are playing and three of them have lost by 2 hours later, it's kind of not as relevant anymore.
Yeah, it's a little more frozen though, right? I think.
Yeah. There'll be less shakeup.
Chance to debate it a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you walking me through this. You know, I haven't thought about it in as much detail as you. And I know you've been paying really close attention to this all season. So it's very exciting, right? You know, like we said at the top, right? South Carolina, if they only have a, you know, roughly 1/3-ish chance to win, plus or minus, and it's still pretty, as high as that is, it's still pretty a wide open tournament. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very fun tournament. I'm very much looking forward to it.
I think our whole team is. I think one thing that we're looking forward to is actually being able to cover it in person this season. So I will be seeing you actually in 3D in Bridgeport at the Final Four as well. So that'll be great. And so, yeah, definitely I would encourage anyone who's listening to this to, you know, if you do attend these things in person, be looking for Megan, look for myself, and look for everybody on our team. I'll be wearing my Herb Stats gear. Hopefully you will too, Megan. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to see a lot of the folks that we know from the Twitterverse in real life.
Yes, definitely. Looking forward to that part.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. I think it's getting this old man's bedtime.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. Well, that's all for today's episode. Thanks again for listening. As always, make sure you rate, like, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening or watching if you're on YouTube to us. Also, make sure you are subscribed to the stats site, everything you need in terms of women's basketball stats, especially for the NCAA tournament coming up. Must have as you're trying to make your bracket. So definitely go check that out. Also, be sure to be subscribed to our newsletter on Substack to get all of Hoop Stats Bets content in your inbox daily. And last but not least, make sure to follow us on social media at Hoop Stats on all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Thanks again for listening.